Thanks for being with us this morning. Time to talk some health news. And as I mentioned just before the break, some changes are coming in Ontario when it comes to fertility treatments and how much the government will pay couples to access certain treatments. And that move has some questioning whether or not those similar changes or some types of changes should be made in British Columbia as well. My next guest is Dr. Jason Hitkari. He is the co-founder and co-director of the Olive Fertility Center. He has a lot of other titles behind his name as well. Dr. Hitkari, thank you so much for being with us again.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Talk a bit about the changes coming to Ontario and what the government there is doing. So they have announced that they'll fund one round of in vitro fertilization per eligible patient or couple?
That's right, yes. They had a working group together of various stakeholders and put together this program, which allows patients who are 42, where the woman is 42 and under, and as you said, who meets criteria to get access to one IVF cycle. That's right.
And do we know kind of what the success rates for somebody, I know it all varies from health and person to person, but is it still, if someone's 42 and under, do they still have a pretty good chance of this working?
You're right. It totally depends on their age and the factors involved, but primarily the woman's age. So if a patient's 35 or under, their pregnancy rates are really good. It could be as high as 50% or so. But as you get into your early 40s, the pregnancy rates drop quite a bit, which is the reason why they capped the funding to patients 42 and under. Once you start getting at 43, 44, the rates are really, really low. So it just depends primarily on the woman's age and other factors of why they're struggling, but mostly about the woman's age, honestly.
And with the idea that they will fund one cycle of IVF, is that kind of being the responsible way as far as taxpayers and the money that it costs, or what do you think the decision was made to go for one round?
Yeah, it's a very interesting question because we in BC have been trying to advocate for getting some kind of funding in place for years, and so it's interesting to watch what another province has put into place. I mean, there's a lot of questions about how this funding is gonna happen, and the biggest one is, well, who's gonna get access to it? Because they have capped the number of cycles or the number of patients who will get access to that free IVF cycle. And so the question now becomes, well, who is gonna get access? Who deserves to have access? Is it gonna be a lottery, or is it based on your prognosis, how well you'll do? And so that's really a big question. Here in BC, we've always wanted a program that funded or at least provided some degree of help to couples, but we also wanted it to be fair. So I think the biggest problem in Ontario is that not everyone's actually going to get access to the free cycle.
That does seem like a bit of an odd one. Either way they go, if it is a lottery or based on you have to prove, I suppose, that you're the healthiest or that you have the best chance.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, presumably, I mean, they're right kind of in the mix of trying to figure that out now. But you're right. I mean, it just doesn't seem right to provide funding, but not to provide funding for everybody who wants access. I mean, you might be better off saying, this is the money we have available in the government, and maybe we'll distribute a portion or pay for a portion of everyone's cycle rather than covering some people's cycles and not others.
And did they make a rule or talk about, because we've talked about this before, the idea of a single embryo or multiple,
right?
Because if somebody, especially if somebody is paying out of pocket and you want your best chances, and that's what leads to so many more multiple births, but is that being addressed in these new rules?
Yes, it is actually. Part of getting access to that funding is to make sure that only one embryo is put back in the woman at a time. So you're right, to avoid the risk of multiples. And because, as we talked about before, you're right, the multiples, like twins and triplets, can run into complications that are, frankly, very expensive for the healthcare system. So the government's saying, we'll fund IVF to this degree, about $50 million in Ontario, and the exchange for that is that we'll reduce the multiples and therefore save costs at the NICUs or at the hospitals and when looking after complicated multiples. So that is tied into this funding. And it would be important in BC, too, to have that funding tied into some strategy to reduce the multiples and save the government money and actually lead to healthier babies and healthier pregnancies.
And are you hearing from people, patients or people in the community as well, calls for something like this or calls for public funding for fertility treatments?
All the time. I mean, you know, on a more sort of casual level in the office, when you see patients, particularly patients who just can't access the care that they need, You know, they said, why aren't we getting any funding? And they've heard, the patients have heard that Ontario has been funding, and of course Quebec for the last few years has been funding, and they've changed their funding recently. But so there's a lot of buzz among the patients and patient support groups and Fertility Matters Canada, which is the patient advocacy group. There is. There's just really no ongoing dialogue at this point with the BC government to address this or approach this. But you have to, I mean, it does seem quite unfair to patients that people in Ontario, in our country, in Ontario, get something very different than, you know, than we get here in BC, which is essentially no funding for IVF.
It does seem like it raises so many questions, though. I don't know if you call them ethical questions, but even in talking about Ontario and already some of the issues raised there on who gets the funding and what it's going to look like, and even here, do you say to somebody, well, you know, you waited until you were 40, and is it the public's fault that you waited too long and you're no longer a candidate to have a child? Or somebody who's 25 and has a legitimate medical reason for not being able to have children, does that person qualify ahead of the other person who waited?
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's a tricky one. I think when people talk about funding for IVF, they think about that patient that they feel might have waited too long or something to have kids. But it's often sort of very mixed. Often it's more than one issue. Sure, they may be in their late 30s, but they also have another disease like endometriosis or some other explanation. So I also think that as a society, you know, we're just getting more and more complicated. It takes a lot of time to get established, to buy your house in the Lower Mainland, and time goes by, and it's just the way we structured society now that we're looking at having children later, and some of us get caught in that and struggle. So the lines between what's a true diagnosis, like a sperm problem, or versus just a social issue where you just sort of wait, quote-unquote, waited too long, can sometimes be a bit blurry. But even if it's just purely that they just waited too long, it is part of our society, the way our society is going, and you can understand how people can get into that spot.
We've been talking specifically about IVF and the changes in Ontario. Are there other treatments, though, that are also kind of on that list that people would like to see put? Because it's not everybody that has fertility issues has to go the route of IVF. Are there other treatments that you would like to see on the funding list?
I have to say it's interesting because there's a patchwork of kind of what's available currently. So, for example, if a woman has blocked fallopian tubes, she really has two options. One is to do IVF, and in BC she'd have to pay for that, and that would work generally very well, particularly if she's younger. Or the other alternative is to potentially have surgery to fix the fallopian tubes, which doesn't work particularly well, but is covered by the government. So much of our treatment up to IVF is actually covered, such as surgeries, and some, the government does partially fund intrauterine inseminations, which are what people call artificial insemination. So there is a little bit of funding for that. The problem is there isn't funding for what the tool we have, which is IVF, which works very, very well, and is often what's actually needed. So really IVF is the treatment that we'd like at least some partial funding for, probably through a tax credit.
Do you find, is it leading people to make other choices that maybe they wouldn't, as far as maybe going to the States to find an egg donor, finding other places where they can access ways to reproduce that you can't do in Canada?
Not so much from a funding perspective. I mean, the sad part of what happens if somebody can't afford the treatment in BC is that often they just live a child-free life, and it may not be their choice. And so that's the sad part. Particularly, I was sort of reflecting, you know, around Christmas time, where we're spending time with our families and the kids are around, and you realize what it would be like not to have those members of your family. So the sad part is that people just, if they can't afford it and there's no funding here, they just don't access it. And that's, you know, it's a timely time of year to be thinking about it and talking about that.
What happens next? You mentioned that there isn't really a lot of discussion going on about this in BC. Is it something that you continue to lobby the government, or what happens now?
Yeah, it's a very good question. Yes, we have a small working group of fertility physicians, including myself, and doctors from BC Women's Hospital who deal with the complications that come from the multiples. And together we've put together a position paper on funding for BC, which would be more along the lines of a tax credit, because we see that as a fair way of distributing the funds that they would make available. And then we're just at this point trying to, again, get access to the powers that be in the government to again, explain our case and talk about the many things we've talked about today, which is the fairness of allowing patients in BC at least some access.
As it stands now, when someone's footing the bill for their own IVF treatment, is there a limit on how many embryos can be implanted?
Yes, we're pretty firm, actually. We do have guidelines in place, national guidelines on how many embryos to put back, and we do stick with that. And sometimes patients get, you know, they argue that, say, listen, I'm paying for this treatment, but we try and spend our time trying to educate them about the risk of multiples, and generally patients do heed our advice, and so we're pretty good at making sure we follow the national guidelines.
And what is the guideline?
Well, the guideline is for patients who are 35 and under that they have one embryo put back at a time so that you end up with a singleton pregnancy. Patients, once you get past 35, you start having the ability to put two and sometimes even three or more embryos back as the patients get older. And the whole idea there is as patients get older, it's a little harder to get pregnant with IVF, so we're trying to buoy up the chances by putting more than one embryo back.
All right. Well, I'm sure we will be talking about this in the year to come. Dr. Hikari, thank you so much. I appreciate you being with us this morning.
Thank you very much for covering this support topic.
All right. That is Dr. Jason Hikari. He's a co-founder. He's also a co-director at the Olive Fertility Center. We'll take a break. When we come back,